What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Let's Talk Divots podcast. We are your women's professional golf podcast from people who walk inside the ropes on the LPGA Tour. If you don't know us by now, my name's Casey Johnson, and I am joined by my good buddy, Captain Ronnie Dunn, and we are bringing everything golf, everything women's golf, everything women's professional golf at you on a weekly basis, and we just really, really appreciate you helping us grow the game, cover it all, share, like, comment, and just keep passing it around to friends, because that's how this thing gets going, and not just golf, but women, not just women's golf, but golf as a whole. We want to grow the game, and our mission's pure. So please continue to share and like. We are at Let's Talk Divots on all social media platforms, and you can find us, engage with us, interact with us, and we really just appreciate you doing that. But this is a big week right now. Ronnie is live at the U.S. Open in Houston, Texas. What's going on, Ronald?
Well, hey, how you doing, Casey? I know you're live down in, where are you? Mexico. So we are spinning the globe once again with our Zoom call here. So appreciate the, you know, hopefully we get some good quality out here of the sound, because it's kind of breaking up on my end. But it's all good here. I'm over here at the Champions Golf Club just outside of Houston, Texas. It was a five-day event this week. We got rained out on Sunday, which was a good thing because the weather was very poor. The course didn't drain very well, and that was basic. They could have played in the weather. But then Monday morning when they blew the horn again, came back out there at 7:30, it was bitter cold. Temperatures were about 42 degrees, but it said it felt like 38. So the girls were all bundled up again, looked like they were going skiing.
Yeah, so talk to us about those conditions. Like, did you chat to any of the players, any of the caddies? I mean, I know we came from Dallas the week before, and it was darn near freezing temperatures. It was definitely freezing overnight. Obviously, a little bit warmer, but I saw lots of players. They obviously got the memo from Dallas the week before. They were in substantial parkas. They had, you know, fur around the hoods of, you know, jackets, and it just looked like where I come from, the Great White North up there. I mean, like, what was the overall comments from players and caddies about the weather and the course?
You know, in all honesty, it all started out as a beautiful week. Coming down there on Monday from Dallas, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, picture perfect days, bluebirds, blue skies, minor wind blowing, nothing. Temperatures were fine. People were in shorts. Everything was good at the Champions Golf Club there. But come to tournament time, Thursday, Friday was fine, and that was kind of the girls were out there on two different courses. They played Jackrabbit was a course across the street, and then the Champions Club also had a course called Cypress Creek, and that's where they played the remainder Saturday and Sunday's events. But Saturday was a good day, you know, weather-wise. Again, Sunday was just, you know, it started sprinkling a little bit. A few girls got out on the course, and then they blew the whistle rather soon, sounded the horn, and then everybody came in for about a two-hour delay. And then I think they figured, don't go back out there because it's not fair to everybody. They're not going to be playing the same conditions, and then let's just wait till Monday morning. Monday morning rolled around, and the cold front came in. A little high pressure pushed down from Canada, I guess it was, and, man, it was cold. Everybody was bundled up, but they did get the tournament in. A couple records were broken. A couple hearts were broken. It was a tournament. It was the 75th U.S. Open, you know, and we did have a winner on Monday afternoon.
Sounds like just a nice storyline for a U.S. Open and a major championship. But, like, the golf course seemed tough, Ron. How did they get it in that condition with the weather? It was clearly in U.S. Open shape. Is that, you know, what was the consensus with the people down there? Was any chatter?
Well, everybody was saying that the course was tough. Stacey Lewis popped off. She's a very outspoken player out there. And on Saturday, she was saying that USGA made the ladies look silly because the score, only two girls under par on Saturday, I believe it was. The course was played tough. The Jackrabbit course was a little easier than Cypress Creek, where they had the final 2 days. But it looked like, if you looked at it on TV, that the fairways were green and lush. Almost looked like they were painted, but I talked to a security guard and a grounds crew, and they said they were not painted. But the dormant Bermuda rough was everywhere brown. Just outside the fairways was all brown, dormant Bermuda, like a bird's nest. The ball fell into that. It was wasn't too hard. The girl said it wasn't too hard to get it out of there. They were able to move the ball. But if you didn't find the fairway, just like any U.S. Open, it was very penile, and you were looking at a bogey. Scores were, they were indicative of that kind of U.S. Open. They were very high scores. I mean, the cut line, again, was that three over. But and, the course played tough. You know, it was built in 1959. The owner, Jackie Burke Jr., won the Masters in 56 in the PGA Championship. Him and Jimmy DeMeritt, you know, bought this ground and reasons they wanted to get some tournament golf there. And they've had PGA Championships. Arnold Palmer in 66 won the Houston Open there. Tiger Woods in 99, I think it was, won a PGA Tour event there. So it was a top quality, no elevation changes, a lot of like kind of Donald Ross elevated greens where everything rolled off. And there was no fringe. You could putt from 25 yards off. It was pretty wide open when on the runoff areas, but they just ran off into the penalty areas. The course definitely played tough, and the girls weren't very happy the way the USGA set it up on Saturday. But on Sunday for the final day, they moved a lot of tee boxes up. Girls were getting to the par fives and two, a lot shorter clubs coming in. On 18, they were still pretty far out there, hitting probably 180 yards in to 160. So they're out there with their hybrids trying to stick this green that was not quite a turtle shell, but it wasn't very easily held. But the pin was right in the middle, so it made it a little bit easier to play.
I mean, six women under par at the end of the tournament, like that's I seen some really high scores, and I get it, but that's what happens in the men's U.S. Open, right? Like, there's generally only a handful of guys to break par. Why should it, you know, be any different in the women? It's supposed to be the biggest test in golf, and obviously the person that played the best this week, A-Lim Kim, you know, came out with the trophy and was able to break par, as well as, you know, Jin Young Ko, Amy Olsen, and, you know, a couple others, right? So, you know, do you think that's too tough?
Wasn't too tough, and you're right. The U.S. Open is supposed to be the toughest track out there, and they want to make it. There were only four ladies under par at the end of the round. But A-Lim Kim, she kind of came up and stole it. It was Amy Olsen's to win or lose. Jin Young Ko played very well. I mean, she almost came up and stole it. Imbie Park had the round. She shot a 67, four under par on Sunday. But A-Lim Kim, she birdied the last three holes, and all three of her approach shots were inside 12 feet. The first one was maybe a four-footer on 16, which was a par three. The 17th hole was a very tough hole. 380 yards out there, she put it to 18 inches, made those two putts, and then coming down the 18th, she had about 170 in and stuck it to about 8 feet and made that putt. Three birdies in a row. She sat in the clubhouse waiting for the other ladies to come in. She was probably, I'd say, the fifth from the end group. And so she waited for a good 45 minutes before Amy Olsen could not hold out from the fairway what she needed to make eagle on the 18th to at least force a playoff. And A-Lim Kim walked away with the $1 million prize and the beautiful trophy.
Yeah, wasn't that incredible? I mean, three birdies to finish in some of the most difficult conditions that they could potentially ever play. I mean, a U.S. Open, so it will be. If she plays 20 U.S. Opens, it's probably going to be some of the top 30 conditions she's going to play on tour. To go birdie, 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 and win a debut U.S. Open and debut in America as well, to, you know, beat out a few really great players, you know, in contention there coming down the stretch. So, like, really, really phenomenal, and welcome to the world, A-Lim Kim. But what about Amy Olsen? I mean, she had a two-shot lead heading into the back nine. Obviously, she was dealing with some emotional struggles, lost her father-in-law on the night before, I believe. So a little bit difficult, but seeing that hybrid on 16, I believe, blew it over the green, was kind of sealed her fate. Pretty tough to get up and down from that location.
Yeah, but in her presser afterwards, she talked about the 16th hole. They were all asking her, you know, what club she hit and what happened there. She had 170 yards to clear the bunker in the previous hole, the 15th. She hit a 5-iron, 152 yards. So she has a gap between her 5-iron and her 4-hybrid. So she went to the 4-hybrid. She didn't think the 5-iron was going to carry the 170. So she hit it. The pin was at 180, and she landed about 180. It trickled off the back of the green, got into the dormant Bermuda. She had a little chip shot, hit it to about pin high, and it rolled out 10 feet past and missed the putt. I mean, it was her tournament. A-Lim Kim just came up and stole it. She had the best six or eight shots of her career. First time ever playing in the States. She came over. there was 156 ladies teed up, 66 made the cut. She ended up the last person with the lowest score. And like I said, 8 perfect shots towards the end. After she hit her tee ball, she picked up her tee. She didn't even look at the ball. She just knew the shots were pure. And sure enough, she nailed 3 putts in a row to take the trophy. But yeah, Amy Olsen's husband flew down on Friday because she knew her wife was in contention. He wanted to be there. And then they got the news Saturday night that the father-in-law passed away. So Sunday was no play due to rain. So the husband flew back home. Amy and her caddy, Tia, who you pretty much know, she's one of the few female caddies out there, but they kind of just took a day off on Sunday, gathered their thoughts, came back out there. And she played well on Sunday or Monday. There's no two ways about it. She did not lose the tournament. Aileen Kim just came up and stole it.
Yeah, I mean, Kim comes with her, like, she tied the largest comeback in U.S. Women's Open history, which is 5, coming from 5 behind. 7 players have done so, including Annika Sormstan. So sometimes there's just nothing you can do when somebody comes out there, gets hot and steals it and gets unconscious, you know, like especially in U.S. Open. Anytime you make 3 birdies in a row is quite a substantial, you know, like that's, you know, great golf. And to do it in the U.S. Open on those greens, man, those things were quick. They were like cool tabletops. So, yeah, absolutely. Just stole the show. Amy Olsen, you know, not much you can do in that sort of situation unless she matches with unconscious. But also a little bit less pressure coming in from, you know, 5-6 groups behind for sure. Just, you know, getting a little more aggressive, and looked like they could get aggressive because of all the rain. Like, I don't know. It looked like a little controversial that they were playing the ball down. What was the hype going on there about that, Ronnie?
Well, USGA never plays lift clean and play. So there's been a lot of talk about that, but playing the ball down, there's a lot of mud balls out there, and they're talking about, you know, picking them up, cleaning them off, placing them back. But obviously USGA says, no, we're not going to do that. You know, the course played fair. Aileen Kim just kind of had, you know, 8 of the best shots she's ever had in her life. It was just unbelievable. But the green size is 9,500 square feet was the average green size out there. That's the size of a Major League Baseball diamond, the infield of a Major League Baseball diamond. So there were a lot of 3 putts out there. The greens were hard. For whatever reasons, the rain didn't affect it. The balls were bouncing on the greens and rolling out, but the fairways were soft and the balls were sticking and you weren't getting any run out at all. But course was in great shape. There's only 43 bunkers on the entire track on that 18-hole Cypress Creek course, which is pretty amazing to me, that few bunkers, and it played so hard. But these ladies, they know how to get it done, and it was good to see a low score like that. A few ladies did put some numbers up there. Nobody had 3 birdies in a row except Aileen Kim, and they happened on
really
16, 17, 18.
Wow.
Yeah, for the whole
that's
day.
Incredible. That's
incredible. Yeah, there were a few other good stories on Friday night. One lady, Jian Kim too, had 3 birdies in a row to make the cut on the number. Dave Buhai was on the bag, and I talked to him later. He said she was just playing unconscious towards the end, and it was pretty phenomenal. The course was the winner there. There's no two ways about it, but it was kind of bittersweet to see a Korean win it. You know, it's okay. They've won 10 out of the last 16 U.S. Opens, 14 out of the last 29 majors. The winner has come from Korea. But, you know, Kim got it done. There's no two ways about it. She had the lowest amount of birdies through the week, which was only 16. So it was a fair test out there. It's not that the USG set it up, but lift clean and place. You know, we can talk for hours about that. You know me, I'm all about the easier the better, make it the game fun for everybody. Clean that ball up. But I'm not so sure if mud makes that much of a difference to me when you're
Ronnie. No, 100% it does, man. It'll make it like mud ball. If a high percentage of those are mud balls, I'm with you. For once, you and I agree. I think that they should have, you know, you got to play lift clean in place. Like all of a sudden, it's a crapshoot because it, like, if you have a big clump of mud on the right side of your ball, that thing could go 30 yards left. Like, that's how much the aerodynamics are affected. No kidding. And even, or how about if it's on the front end of your ball and that's coming in contact with the club face? I mean, you're just leaving it up to, you know, all of a sudden it's like a bit of luck involved. And obviously everybody has to play with that, but it takes a little bit of, you know, just it may kind of make some guesswork. And I don't know, I get that the USGA never always plays the ball down, and that's cool, but it could have decided a little bit differently potentially with that,
yeah,
in my opinion.
Well, Moria, who I think finished sixth when it was all said and done, Moria Chitarnagarn, she was in one of the final groups. They showed her ball on TV, and there's a big, huge mud clot right where the club head would strike the ball. But it just seems like to me, if you're hitting a 100-mile-an-hour club head speed and the ball's flying out at 120 miles an hour, as soon as that impact, that mud would fall off. But I guess it does kind of sway the ball. And, yeah, playing the ball down, you know, through the green and the tight areas, I think if you hit the ball in the fairway and you got mud on it, you should be able to lift clean and either drop it or place it right where you pulled it, not really set it up on a tee again. But, you know, major controversy in that. But USGA, they say, no way, we're not doing it. Even at the Masters, they never lift clean and place there. They don't even call it mud ball there. They call it organic matter. That's how technical they get down at the Masters. But Dustin Johnson said he had mud on his ball, and Dottie Pepper called it organic matter, and he aimed 10 yards to the right. And sure enough, the ball spun to where he thought it would in the middle. Then he had another mud ball, and he just couldn't see, aiming over the lake, hoping that the ball was going to curve. So I guess it does. I mean, you know better than I do. It's just like in baseball when a pitcher takes a razor blade out there and splits the seam or something. That little aerodynamic makes that ball drop and move more so than anything. So it is true, and unfortunate that they didn't do it. But I agree, don't let them do it. If they've never done it, you can't change it for this tournament. But it was still it was still a fun tournament.
If the USGA wasn't stirred up in controversy after a U.S. Open, men's or women's, then it just wouldn't be the USGA doing their job in the last 10 years. So kudos to the USGA for keeping the controversy going.
Well, you know, like I said earlier, Stacey Lewis popped off on Saturday. This is one time when the ladies were on the center stage. So, yeah, there was no other tournaments going on. Yeah, we got a little Monday night Sunday football going on, but the whole world was watching these ladies play golf. And Amy Olsen had the lead on day one. She actually had an ace on the 12th hole, stuck it in there, which she was one over. Then she went one under there, and that kind of got the momentum going. She finished at 4 under par on Thursday. Friday, the scores were kind of going low. Karen Stuffles, even the commentator, said that she thinks it's going to be double digits winning this. And as soon as USGA got word of that, they tightened it all down on Saturday. And Saturday, only two women were under par on the hole 66 that made the cut. One good thing that we had going out, there were a lot of amateurs. 24 amateurs started it. Six of them made the cut. Two of them were in the final group on Saturday. So that was really cool to see. And, you know, the amateurs were saying, one amateur, Caitlin Papp, who I believe finished fifth maybe or seventh, she even had to take – she said it was like a college event. There were no crowds out there, which played into the hands of the amateurs. But she had to take a final on after Thursday's round. She went to a room and did a college final. So she said it felt just like a college tournament to her because obviously there was no grandstands, but the big tents were up. It did have the feeling of a U.S. Open, the beginning of the week, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, when all the players, you know, 156 from all over the globe. I mean, we set out – I mean, I had a little list of what countries were represented, but United States obviously had the most up there. We had 75 of the top women's Rolex players, 41 of the players, including I.L. Kim, never played the U.S. Open before. There were 24 amateurs, 9 past champions. Koreans represented 27 in the field. Japan had 19. Sweden was a strong contingent with 10 ladies. They had a couple amateurs up there. They had 3 amateurs in the top 13. So it was pretty good. I mean, it was great to see it out there. And there was some real buzz about the U.S. Open in the very beginning. And then as the story Saturday rolled around, they tightened the belt up a little bit. The scores kind of came south. And, you know, it is what it is.
Ron, you continue to just amaze me with all your stats coming at me, bud. That's glorious work there. And, just to go round out a little bit of leaderboard work here, you know, there was some other feel-good stories out there for sure. Like you mentioned, Caitlin Papp was actually tied for 9th along with Arya Jatanagarn, and pretty cool. Was Moria and Arya paired together in the final group? That's what happened there, right? That's kind of cool.
They were paired together Saturday in the Saturday group. They were paired together. Chitarnagarn was paired on Saturday, and Arya actually made a little run there. She wasn't out of it. I mean, anybody within 5 shots, like you said, it happened 7 times before. A.L. Kim being the 7th, you know, coming from 5 shots back. I thought somebody might come up and steal it. I had no idea this A.L. Kim, A.L. Kim. But, you know, props to her again. She got it done. But yeah, going down the top 10, Jin Young Ko, she looked strong on Sunday. On the weekend, she played probably the best. Saturday, I think she had one birdie, one bogey early on in the first two or three holes, and then she went 16 pars after that. So par is always a good score at the U.S. Open.
Well, obviously, Jin Young Ko right there, and, you know, she was last week as well in Dallas, and just, you know, she's number one in the world for a reason. We can clearly see that, you know, the LPGA's tours missed that dominance from her, you know, being in Korea all year, but hopefully she's poised to make a consistent return to the LPGA in 2021. But Imbi Park, same thing, right there. I was just going there. I know where you're going. I know Lee Six. Lee Six is exactly. Defense, right? That's right. Yeah, and props to her.
I'm talking Shibuno. Shibuno, the one who won the Women's British Open last year, first time ever playing outside of Japan. She went over to England last, wherever the Open was, and stole that trophy. She had the lead Friday and Saturday. I mean, she was looking – it was her tournament to lose, I guess you could say, because she didn't win it. But on Sunday, she had a terrible day. I think she had maybe one – oh, she birdied.
No, she was one under. She was one under on Sunday. It was Saturday that she fell backwards. So she had like a four-over day on Saturday, and she was actually one under to finish Sunday. But, yeah, you're right. That Shibuno just
– Sunday she wasn't. She started four under. She finished one over.
I'm looking at it right now.
I believe it was.
I got it right in front of me.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, she had four bogeys on Sunday, and I don't think she had five birdies. I know she birdied the 18th. The only four girls under par on top of the leaderboard all birdied the 18th hole, which was kind of neat. Shibuno must have had a 25.
Oh, sorry. You're 100% correct. I'm looking at the total score. Yeah, she was three over for the tournament. So she pooped the bed, for lack of a better term. So yeah, it was her tournament to lose, but what a breath of fresh air. I mean, what do they call her? Smiley. And she's you know, just constantly ear to ear.
Smiley Cinderella. She smiles.
But I mean,
all
like
day, all day,
how about Smiley. I know we're in the middle of a pandemic and I might get criticized for this, but Ailing Kim with the mask on the whole time. Hey, that's I know we've definitely seen it sometimes out there, but you know, maybe you're gonna see some more players wearing masks on all the time if that gets the major championship belt around your waist.
Well, in all honesty, I got to say, having a mask on your face was 10 degrees warmer. As you're
Fair
breathing
enough.
Out, you get that. So that was one of the things. But she did all 4 days she wore that mask. And I think good for her. You know, I think it's great for television, let people see that you should be wearing these masks if you want to stop this pandemic. But she did take it off for the interviews afterwards and stuff. But it was good. Even in the little lunchroom when she finally won the trophy, Lee Six and one other Asian girl came in with champagne and poured it all over the 20-year-old. Can't even drink the stuff. Didn't speak very much English. Just sat in the players' lounge waiting for Amy Olsen to miss that 170-yard shot for two on 18. And like I said, she had the trophy. It was a little lackluster, to be honest, just because there's no crowds out there. Towards the end, all the volunteers were walking the final groups in. So there was a good probably 200 people out there, 150 at least on the 18th green. You know, watching a trophy presentation, which actually took place on the number one tee. But good for her. Yeah, you know, she played strong. She's not going to take – she's fine. She's still smiling today. She's going to take a check away from this thing. You know, Amy Olsen made a good probably $400,000 on her biggest payday. She finished second one other time a few years back at the Avion Championship, lost to Angela Stanford for her first major. But, you know, Shibuno was up there. She hits a really good ball, smiling all the time. Never disappointment. None of these Asians slam their clubs or anything. I saw a few Americans slamming clubs, you know, Christy Kerr talking to the ball left and right. The Asians, they're taught so well over there that, I mean, you've taught over there. You know how their mentality is. It's, you know, move on and get on with the next shot.
Yeah, they've got great composure. And, you know, while we're on the topic of Asian players, I mean, Lee Six and her defense, you know, obviously trying to get the win, you know, you're always disappointed. But, I mean, golf's a game where you don't win every week you tee it up. And it was a pretty strong showing with a tie for six.
Well, good for Lee Six. Yeah, she did come back towards the end. She had nothing going on in the very beginning, and then she made a little bit of a run, you know, not quite a run, but made a couple birdies coming down late in the day on Sunday. So she did get in the top 10. Megan Kang, hats off to Megan Kang from Massachusetts. She's never won out there on tour. She's been out there 5 years, but she gave it a good go. She was right up there on day one. You know, she held the lead for a little while, then Amy took it from her, but she stayed in there. She had a top 10, which was great to see. You know, Imbie Park made a good run, 67, 400 par on Sunday. Good for her. You know, defending, she was a past champion. I think she's won it twice before. So it was some great golf out there. The course definitely was the champ out there. You know, played 6,700 yards, 43 bunkers, 9,500 square foot greens, big ass greens. So, and like I said, the fairways were beautiful. The rough was a bird's nest, dormant, looked all brown on TV. Didn't look very good, but the course was in great shape, and the best player came out on top, I guess, the most consistent. And like I said, struck eight of the best shots of her career and strung them in a row, and they just happened to be her last eight shots of the tournament.
Well, how about a few notables coming into the tournament that didn't perform? I mean, Nelly Korda missed the cut. You know, we had really high hopes for Emily Kristin Pedersen coming off the three wins in a row in Europe we chatted so much about in last week's podcast, missing the cut. You know, obviously it was really tough conditions out there, but, you know, a few big people had their hopes of another major squashed out there. What was the vibe like with some of those players?
How about a couple of the loopers that called in to take home Emily Pedersen? She called on Terry McNamara, 45-year veteran out there, won numerous times, 83, 85-plus times out there. And he was on Emily's back. They finished at 5 over par. She just never got it going on her very first hole. I walked down there and watched them tee off. She had a 4-footer for birdie, and she missed that. And that's always kind of been her woes as the putter. Everybody has a woes with the flat stick, but, and that just kind of set the tone for the rest of the tournament. She does get a little aggressive between the ears up there, and she might, you know, hit the bag a little bit with the club. And then, did you see who Lexi Thompson had on her bag?
No, who?
That would be, I forget his name. I think it was Tim Tucker.
Tucker from the tour, PGA Tour.
Bryson DeChambeau's bag. He won the U.S. Open on the men's side. And he comes down to the ladies' side to tee up with Lexi Thompson. And Lexi's all, just give me a number. Don't tell me the barometric pressure, the earth atmosphere, the rotation, anything like Bryson needs to know. Just give me a number. And Lexi didn't do anything. I think she was 5 over as well. So that didn't pan out. A lot of the big names. Nelly might have went home, but Jessica made the cut, so they had one of the quarters in there. But, yeah, a few big names went home for sure.
Yeah, well, that's the name of the game, right? That's sport. That's why we play it out. Underdogs, they come, and, you know, the emotions ripe, and it's not set in stone. It's not always there, and that's why we continue to tee it up and turn on the TV and watch these things play out year after year after year. So phenomenal. We're coming down to the end of the season, obviously. I'm on holiday. I don't have any more job for the rest of the year, so surfing in Mexico here, but we're still doing our best to bring it live to you, the people. But we got one more week, Ron, CME. We got anything else to touch on the U.S. Open? What do you figure?
No, I think it was great. I mean, number 94 in the world, A-Lim Kim, gets it done. She's holding the trophy. Good for her. Taking a check back for $1 million. I don't know how many yen that is, but, man, that's going to pay for a lot of rice out there. I don't mean to be a that way. It's gonna she'll buy a house over there with that money. But yeah, you're right, we got one more tournament, the tour championship, the CME, which is in Florida. The U.S. Open was in Houston. You took off, flew south on an airplane to Mexico. I am driving west. I'm not going to CME. It's in Florida. I live in California. I'm halfway across the country for the last tournament. And they actually added 10 positions on there and gave up a couple of sponsor invites. Sophie Popoff, the winner of the AIG British Open, was not even in the field, and I'm not even sure if they're giving her one of the invites, but they did bump it up from 60 participants to, I think, 70 or 72. So we'll see if Sophie gets in. I don't even think Jin Young Ko was in. Number one in the world wasn't even in CME because she didn't play over here that much. So
Do you know who got the invites?
I do not know. I have not heard that yet.
Okay. Well, one more event left, and we will do our best to broadcast it to you, as we've done our best in these crazy, crazy times from all different parts of the world, to you, the people, the followers of the Let's Talk Divots podcast. Please, please, please deal with a little bit of background noise as I'm sitting on the street in the middle of nowhere stealing some Wi-Fi. So I'm super happy that we can do this and share with a friend.
Well, we will be back. We will be back next season as well, guys. So Let's Talk Divots is not going away. We're going to put that divot back in the ground, replace it, stomp it out, water it, and we will be back for the 2021 season. CME next week. We'll try to get you something. Either one, Casey or I will be there. Casey's, like you said, surfing away down in Mexico. We'll see what happens. But we've enjoyed doing this. We enjoy all the feedback we got from you. We've touched over 45 countries across the globe. So we totally enjoy this. We're glad you guys are listening in. And hit us up with an email anytime. letstalkdivots@gmail.com. We're happy to answer your questions.
All right, man. Appreciate you, Ronnie. Appreciate the listeners. Appreciate the fans. And we will talk next week, bro. I hope this works out. And the people get to hear it out. So drive safe the rest of the journey and chat soon, brother. Ciao for now.
Right on. Get into the green room for us. Happy holidays, everybody.